Against a black background, a lion roars inside a circle of decorated reels of celluloid. Above, the words Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, beneath 70th anniversary. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents. White lettering against the black background reads a Trilogy Entertainment Group production. A Stephen Hopkins film. Angular shapes cut from the black background revealing a grey murky sea slowly move from the top and bottom of the screen. Picked out in white lettering, Jeff Bridges. The green-grey letters become bigger. Tommy Lee Jones. The letters come together, shift places and form the words blown away in the centre. A flash of lightning. Lloyd Bridges, Forrest Whitaker. Susie Amos. Co-starring John Finn, Steffi Lineberg. Lloyd Catlett, Caitlin Clark, Chris D'Oni, Ruben Santiago Hudson. Casting by Michael Fenton, CSA, Alison Cowett, CSA. Co-producer Dean O'Brien. Music by Alan Silvestri. The darkness lightens to reveal an aerial view of a rocky coastline, waves crashing beneath. Costume designer Joe I. Tompkins. A crash of lightning. Editor Timothy Welburn. Production designer John Graysmark. Director of photography Peter Levy, ASC. Executive producer Lloyd Segan. Story by John Rice and Joe Battier and MJ Roach. Screenplay by Joe Battier and John Rice. A bird's eye view of illuminated windows are just discernible in the darkness. Produced by John Watson, Richard Lewis, Penn Densham. Directed by Stephen Hopkins. An immense turreted fortified building in the shape of a cross set high on the clifftops is momentarily illuminated in a flash of lightning. Castle Glee Prison, Northern Ireland. A prison door bursts open and a warder leads a prisoner down a darkened corridor. Captions translate dialogue between the prisoners. The prisoners led past cells.
C-14.
Right.
A prisoner leans from a cell and shouts, "How solitary, Kevin?" "You didn't touch yourself in there, did you?"
"Could he get the wheelchair and pull Jack up?"
Kevin replies, "Why do you think I'm having such a hard time seeing?" The guards push him on. Kevin shouts, "Go screw yourself," and is thrown into a cell.
"Get in there."
A man's reading in the darkness.
"Geraghty. Here's your playmate, Pa.
Good night, girls."
The bars close. The two men regard each other.
"Hold the horn."
Kevin shouts, "Kiss my ass." The warder gestures with the struncheon and goes. Kevin, "Sorry, I got thrown in the hole." Geraghty replies, "No matter."
"You like to fight. It's your nature."
Kevin struggles to his feet, wincing in pain. Long-haired, weather-faced Geraghty helps him to his bunk. "Kevin, thanks for waiting. Geraghty, couldn't do it without you."
"Bastard."
"Kevin, you bastard. You know we're going to make it, don't you?" Geraghty, book in hands, nods gravely. "Kevin, how can you be so sure?" "Geraghty, I've seen it. Sleep."
"I'll wake you when I'm ready. The end of all of it."
Kevin lies back exhausted against the rancid bedding. A flash of lightning reveals Geraghty reading beside shelves lined with books. The warder switches out the cell lights, then walks the corridors shining a torch. Geraghty's nose and eye are barely discernible in a faint strip of light. As Kevin lies asleep on his back, Geraghty toys with a knife, then silently approaches Kevin, pillow to his chest. Swiftly, he pushes the pillow down onto Kevin's face and plunges the knife deep in a frenzied attack. Geraghty twists the knife. He removes the pillow.
"Unfortunately, you bastard, I saw you stand here."
Geraghty moves away in the darkness and vomits. He holds up and stretches a condom filled with a golden liquid. He covers Kevin's body with a sheet, glances through the bars quickly, his long unkempt hair briefly illuminated. He then fetches a metal bar and retrieves the bloodied pillow. Garrity empties a slop bowl, then uses the knife to cut into the pillow, pulling out some stuffing and putting it into the bowl. He then carefully unscrews the top on a cylindrical metal tube. Hearing something, he listens, all senses strained a moment. Garrity then pours the tube's syrupy contents over the stuffing. He carefully places the stuffing down the begrimed toilet pan, its seat long since gone. He then removes chrome piping attaching the pan to the wall. Garrity then folds some black and white photographs in a cloth bag. One is of a pretty dark-haired woman. Another, larger one, has the wording, "Never be at peace." Garrity carefully inserts the condom of liquid inside a hole at the back of the toilet pan. He tips the pan and places it flush to the wall, then uncoils a wire from it. He jumps over to the bars and pulls Kevin's body and mattress on top of him. Garrity pulls a match from his teeth and strikes it against a bar. Garrity carefully lights his end of the wire. The lighted fuse moves swiftly along the tiled floor. Garrity lies down, his face pressed to the bars. The explosives ignite in the bowl. A huge cloud of black smoke and debris erupt through the bars of Garrity's cell. Garrity makes for the hole in his cell wall. A warder appears at the bars. Garrity shoots. The warder topples over the balcony railings. Garrity clambers out through the hole. An arched bridge spanning the Charles River, the vast city of Boston sprawling in the distance. A motorbike passes across the wide stone brick bridge. The grey grim city skyline reaches into a cloudy leaden sky. Boston, USA. The helmeted rider of the Harley-Davidson Sportster pulls up on a street briefly. He pulls away again, a blue patent Hawaiian shirt protruding from beneath a fabric bomber jacket, and a golden retriever perched unfazed on his lap. He rides down a quiet side street and pulls up by a downtown apartment block. A birthday party's in full swing. A pretty young woman with short, mousy hair carries a round birthday cake. A girl with long fair hair excitedly comes to sit. The biker rushes to a door with a present and pushes it open. The man, Jimmy Dove, sneaks in behind the assembled children as the girl, Lizzie, takes a deep breath to blow out her 9 candles. The cake's decorated with strawberries. Lizzie whispers in her mother's ear.
I wish for Jimmy Dove to be my dad.
You're supposed to keep your wishes to yourself.
Birthday girl! Yay!
Lizzie and Jimmy embrace.
Look at you! Dress, huh? You look gorgeous.
I know. My mom bought me this dress at the mall. It was $18.
$18? That's not bad.
She reaches for the gift.
What's this?
What is this thing? Yeah, get it. Pull it out of there. Pull it.
Her jaw drops as she unwraps a small keyboard.
A piano. Cool.
Hey, turn it on right here.
Her mother, Kate, mouths thank you.
Thank you.
Jimmy takes off his bomber jacket.
Now, your mom doesn't give you lessons on that thing. I will.
Look, Megan, look what Jimmy got me.
At your place, maybe.
Jimmy hugs Kate.
You look gorgeous, too.
Thank you. Yeah.
Now, blindfolded, Jimmy's mucking about, playing pin the tail on the donkey. Kate steers Jimmy towards the donkey picture. He pins it on its nostril.
Did I win?
He turns, listening. Then pulls the blindfold off in irritation and heads inside to get his pager from his jacket. He reads the message, then picks up the phone. Kate watches from the doorway, and they exchange a look.
Boston bomb disposal.
Yeah, Rita, Dove.
Sorry to bug you on your day off, you got one.
Yeah, where?
MIT, the computer lab.
All right, I'll be over there.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Bye.
What's that all about?
Yeah, probably nothing.
Don't worry about it.
Tell Lizzie that
Tell her to make it up to her, okay?
Yeah, don't worry about it, I'll save you some cake.
Good.
Have fun, okay?
Got to. Boomer, you stay here.
Jimmy pats his retriever. Kate watches him go. The back of a white Boston police van bursts open and a young black guy in a baseball cap comes out, scanning the crowds who are being evacuated from a building. He removes a cigarette from the mouth of a man who's being helped into protective gear.
Bombs and butts, a bad combo, Bama.
Jimmy pulls up amongst graduation students in mortarboards who mill in the crowd.
Hey, JD!
The black guy blanket.
Sorry to call you on your day off, partner.
Jimmy removes his helmet.
How can I help you, Bombs?
Dog sniffed out C4. About a half a pound of the shit buried inside a computer. There's a girl hooked up to the thing. Second floor, center.
Her hacker boyfriend got jealous. He's rigged it so she's got to keep typing. She quits, building goes.
One more thing. Before the boy blew his brains out, he hooked up a counter to the thing. A hard drive gets full and...
Who's in there with her?
Cortez and his little pal Manfred.
Can I bum a smoke?
Jimmy catches a cigarette from Bammer, the man being padded up by colleague Rita.
Let's do it.
In the computer room, a distraught, perspiring woman keys in "Love You" repeatedly on a keyboard which appears on screen. Beside her, a disposal expert is programming a robot known as Manfred, its metal arm poised over a keyboard.
Captain, Manfred is all set to go.
Come on, Manfred. Don't let me down, boy. We're almost there, Nancy. Hang on. Come on, baby.
Manfred's robotic fingers tap letters on the keyboard. A man lies dead on the floor.
Okay, Nancy. We're gonna have you out of here pretty soon. Don't look over there. Look at me.
JD, check it out. Captain's a damn genius.
Jimmy and the disposal team watch a screen.
Wicked mad genius.
Into a microphone.
All right, Mary. We're almost ready to go.
It's Nancy!
Right. Okay, Cortez. Activate the B-board and get your Cuban ass and marry the hell out of here.
Come on, Mary, baby. Let's go. Get ready.
They watch the robot take over the task.
Go. Looks like this thing might pay for itself, yeah?
The robot's fingers jam.
Get back to the keyboard!
What is wrong now, you pile of shit? Nancy, relax!
Jimmy tears out of the police surveillance van into the building and up a flight of stairs.
Where is she?
In there.
Jimmy peers through the room's glass-paneled door at Nancy, who's now back at a keyboard frantically typing. Jimmy takes a deep breath before entering. Cortez works with a soldering iron. Jimmy comes close to Nancy. A box on the computer screen reading, "My darling Bobby changes to you bitch." Jimmy grins.
Hi.
Hi.
Dons a protective jacket.
Who the hell are you?
Dove. James Dove.
He winks and she smiles in spite of her terror.
Cortez, why don't you get Manfred out of here? Buy him a drink. Looks like he could use one.
Hang on.
Jimmy inspects the computer.
What am I doing here? This was my day off. They call me in, I come, but do they listen to me?
The arm lurches. Nancy freezes. The arm lowers.
Forget about me and forget yourself a drink. Why don't you make it a double?
The bytes on screen count down to 71.
This drive sounds funny. Something's slowing it down.
Yeah, I could have told you that. What are we going to do?
Got to get between your legs, Nancy.
Nancy nods stoically. Jimmy crouches and slides on his back under the desk. He stares at the dead body of the man, then, in a nightmarish flashback, he recalls the victim of a blast, a woman, her face horribly scarred. She calls out.
Lim, help me.
He shakes the memory free. Getting into position, he dons protective goggles, a torch between his teeth. Nancy continues to type the stream of "Love You" with 47 bytes remaining, then starts as Jimmy cuts a hole through the bottom of the desk with a jigsaw. He removes the panel, revealing a mass of wires.
How much time we got, Nance?
She stares, stupefied.
Nance, how many bites? Bites, how many?
24. I don't want to die.
He probes the wires.
Nance, don't give up on me.
You're doing great. Here it is.
He prepares to cut.
It's going to be a piece of cake.
What was that?
He flings off the goggles, blinking away sawdust.
Tell me something. You like red wine or white wine?
I don't give a shit, just do something!
Red, me too.
His cutter hovers over a red wire.
She loves me.
Hurry now!
She loves me.
Jimmy now helps Nancy through the crowds. His partner Blanket stops him. The exhausted Jimmy shoots him a look.
Did
you maybe dispose of the device, huh? Guys, you don't do your job?
Yay.
Great work, Jimmy. Dumb. Great work.
Now away from the crowds behind a stone pillar, Jimmy tears off his protective jacket, breathing erratically. He turns and his mouth drops open in horror, as if seeing something. A dreamlike black-and-white flashback of an army tank moving through a busy Northern Irish street. British soldiers watch. A young woman screams. A telephone box explodes. Bodies fly. Jimmy watches the blast. Jimmy leans on the wall and vomits. He steadies himself. A quiet square is dominated by a spired church. Jimmy pulls up on his bike outside an unassuming white wood panelled block on a Boston street. A large banner outside shows the American flag inside a giant green four-leaf clover. Jimmy enters the block up a flight of steps as an old man in a robe appears in a garden at the rear. Spanner in hand, the old boy marches to a jacuzzi under a wooden gazebo. He bashes pipework.
Pump, you bastard! Pump! Pump! Pump!
With a look of surprise, the white-haired man Max, cigar between his teeth, quickly takes off his orange checked robe and prepares to step in. The bubbles stop.
Who needs a damn bubbles anyhow?
Hey, Max.
Hey, Jimmy.
Thanks for the beer.
Come by for a dip, did you?
Not with no bubbles.
Screw it. Screw the damn bubbles. All I need anyhow is just some hot water to soak my weary bones. Believe me.
They sit beside a pigeon coop.
Heard you had yourself a doozy down in Cambridge today.
Yeah.
Well, you should have taken my advice and stayed on as a beat cop like I did. A lot easier dodging bullets than bombs.
When did you know it was time to get out?
I didn't know it was time to get out. I think I knew it was time. As soon as I started asking myself if I thought it was time. You've been asking yourself that question a lot, have you?
A pensive Jimmy swigs from the bottle and looks down.
It's time, friend. You've done your penance.
Yeah. Then how come I don't feel absolved?
Don't know, Jimmy. How come, huh? Come on, no bubbles, but the hot water will do you good.
Drinkers stagger out from a dull seedy pub into the night. Inside, a fit, clean-shaven Garrity is facing away from the bar with his arms around two women.
Hey, fella.
The barman brings over three shots and nudges Garrity.
That's for you, my darling.
Thank you.
That's for you, my dear.
Put it on my tab, Francis.
Cash.
The barman shakes his head. Garrity tries to brazen it out. He looks up at a TV.
Moments ago, Lieutenant James Dove of the Boston Bomb Squad came racing down.
Garrity's attention is drawn and he moves towards the TV.
Hey,
the barman calls after him as he gets up close, peering a little drunkenly at the footage of Jimmy Dove at the scene. He continues to stare, mouth open in disbelief, intrigued, a faint smile playing upon his lips.
James Dove.
At home, Kate calls to Boomer.
Boomer, get down. Officer came.
The kids are watching the news.
Jimmy's on TV.
Situation. He has later been identified as Lieutenant James Dove.
She stares at the screen in sickened disbelief, then heads for the door. She heads out, a violin case over her shoulder. The camera moves across the cello section of an orchestra, the men and women dressed casually. The musicians in the flute and violin sections concentrate hard. Kate smiles away. The conductor looks down at her despairingly.
Well, we have a new soloist. Kate, you appear to be here, but you're not playing like it.
I'm sorry.
People, please, we've only got 3 weeks to put this whole thing together. And we don't want to let down our founding fathers, do we?
No.
Do we?
No.
Thank you. Now, there are going to be fireworks popping out in the skies. I want to hear them popping out of you.
Feels like we're playing the Patriots, not the Pops.
Let's take it back to letter P, shall we?
Kate prepares herself with a sigh. The orchestra plays on the huge open-air hatch-shell concert stage, the ceiling of its domed roof glowing in the darkness. Jimmy listens from the ground, smiling proudly. Later, in an Italian restaurant, he tucks into spaghetti vongole as a preoccupied Kate returns to the table, her food untouched. She nearly bumps into a waiter. She gives him a hurt and troubled look, then sits, putting on a convincing smile. She leans forward and scrutinizes Jimmy's plate.
How are the muscles?
He rolls up a sleeve and flexes his biceps.
What do you think? Not bad.
Hmm? Looks good on TV, too. Like they're showing off again. You like being a hero, don't you? Why does it always have to be you up there?
It doesn't.
I was wondering about that. You want some more?
Yeah, thanks.
She pours red wine.
Looking for a teaching job.
Why?
I beg your pardon?
That's crazy. You're good at what you do. You love it.
Kitty.
And we both know you're going to keep doing it.
I said I'm putting up for a teaching job. I thought you'd love
that.
Pass
me the cheese.
He passes Parmesan cheese, and Kate smiles unconvinced.
Really? Then what?
You know, you think I love what I do, but I don't.
She listens with interest and delight.
You think you know me? You don't. I can't sleep, okay? I puke my guts out when I shut one down.
She regards him now in sorrowful shame.
Keep remembering things I want to forget. I can't do it anymore, all right? Everything's different now. You and Lizzie. My life's all different.
Her eyes brim with tears.
What?
I guess.
What?
He takes her hand.
I'm so scared of you doing this for us. And then regretting it.
Okay. All right.
He puts down his napkin and stands as though about to leave. Kate looks up at him and wipes away a tear. Jimmy takes something from his shirt pocket, then kneels beside her, a little embarrassed, but clearly overcome with emotion. He holds out a silver ring.
This is the wrong time?
They glance self-consciously at the other tables. He gazes at her with adoring blue eyes.
No regrets, Kate.
Ever.
Take this thing. Come on. You need the tape. Come on, take it.
She beams and Jimmy slips the ring on her finger, kissing it. The couple delightedly kiss. Garrity wheels his bicycle along a towpath. He carries the bicycle towards an old rusting passenger ship moored on a deserted rickety mooring stage. Under an eerie cloudy light, the rotting upright supports of other mooring stages protrude like rotten teeth through the murky water. Inside the darkened engine room of the ship, the Dolphin, he walks casually over the metal grill flooring carrying a sack bag and up a flight of steps. He prods a pigeon.
Off you go.
And another.
Bitch.
He passes through the dusty remains of a gaming room, a broken chandelier hanging above a roulette table. He goes up a flight of stairs in the near darkness beneath a frosted window depicting a dolphin. He pushes open a metal hatch and squeezes into an upper den. He turns on a dim light and takes out a bow from his sack. He puts a bundle of toy arrows against a cloth doll, its face wrapped with a photocopied photo of Jimmy in police helmet.
Your weapons, Liam. You can never be too safe.
He sets a statue of justice on a cluttered table.
Yes, my fine lady. Balance in all things.
He dials on a hands-free phone. He takes out an old metal wind-up duck from his sack.
Oh, yes. In Boston, please, for the bomb squad. And I'd like the address as well.
He flies the duck on a bicycle through the air.
Oh, no, ma'am. It's not an emergency.
A room is bursting with lines of dancers stamping and kicking their feet as a traditional Irish band play on a small stage. Others watch the celebrations from an upper gallery, which is festooned with white paper wedding bells. Max swings a bridesmaid in a pink dress. Jimmy laughs, strumming his guitar, as a radiant Kate, her hair decorated with tiny white roses, plays her violin. Jimmy embraces Max on the dance floor.
party. Save yourself for tonight.
Come here, Dennis.
Jimmy whisks little Lizzie off her feet. Holding her in his arms, he cavorts wildly up and down the dance floor. She grins as he swings her round. As the guests dance, Jimmy thrusts his guitar at Kate, who scrapes her bow across its strings. The small packed venue jumps as a couple form an arch for the bouncing revelers to duck through. Jimmy finishes strumming his guitar with a flourish, then cheered on, kisses Kate Fool on the lips. Blanket, Bammer and Rita approach.
Congratulations.
Good luck, buddy.
I'm gonna need it.
Hello.
Max from the balcony.
Quit you. Bollocks in her own. Time to toast a bride and groom. So, raise your glasses. Here's to the wings of love. May they never lose a feather as long as his big shoes and her wee little shoes are under the bed together. Oh, and Jimmy, a word of advice now that you've retired from the field. If your married life gets a little too dull for your times and you start getting restless...
I don't know how that's really possible.
You tell us, sweetheart. Just think of your plural stupid friends there diffusing bombs. And then thank your lucky stars that you're home watching the tully with your lovely bride.
As Jimmy leans to kiss Kate once more, she jumps up, straddling him. The guests clap wildly. The band starts up again. Kate spins about the floor, Lizzie in her arms, as a man in a kilt clog dances. The man expertly drums his clogs over the wooden floor. A heavy-set black guy high-kicks and whisks an attractive woman onto the floor, dancing about with her. Jimmy, on an upper gallery, slugs back a drink, then watches the cumbersome black guy jigging around with the woman. Jimmy turns to Blanket.
Who invited Michael Jackson there?
I don't know. Looked like he invited himself. His name is Anthony Franklin. Your replacement, my new partner.
Hey, I wouldn't go calling no damn rookie Jim's replacement.
I don't know. Now, the more I hear about this Franklin, the better I feel about old Jimbo becoming a teacher.
Jimmy wrestles Blanket.
Decorated by the mayor. 2 years on the SWAT team. Clarence Thomas is acting coach.
And I hear he's hung like a China mule.
Yeah? Who told you that?
Your wife, that's...
Congratulations, Lieutenant. Hell of a party you have in here. I'm Anthony Franklin, your replacement.
Hey, hey, hey.
Jimmy pats Anthony.
Yeah, well, so I heard. Welcome to the party, Tony.
Oh, no, it's Anthony. It's Anthony. Anthony. You know, I hate abbreviations. You too?
Blanket shrugs.
But you didn't know that. You don't mind me crashing your party. You know the team and all.
Jimmy looks at the others.
God, I heard a lot about you. And I know you heard a lot about me. I bet you're wishing you could be around to see some of my moves, huh?
Boy, I saw your moves, Anthony.
Jimmy smirks over at Rita and Blanket.
Look, I got my lady waiting downstairs. Enjoy your retirement, Lieutenant.
No, I plan to.
See you guys.
Anthony points back at Blanket.
Watch yourself.
Rita, Bammer and Blanket crack up together. Jimmy eyes them.
Cocky son of a bitch.
Yeah, it reminds me of a cocky son of a bitch that I was.
Max laughs. Blanket fishes in his pocket for his pager.
To be alarmed about, folks, probably just a tease. Party on!
We're gonna miss you, Jimmy.
They head out together.
Hurry, come back. Go to work?
Yeah, back.
Save me one dance.
Blanket gives Kate a kiss and follows his colleagues out. Jimmy looks wistfully over the balcony at the guests still packing the dance floor. Kate comes over. Jimmy puts his arm around her and pulls her close. Smiling, they watch as Max dances with Lizzie, holding her hands and turning the little girl about the floor. Kate, looking radiant and happy, plants a kiss on Jimmy's lips. Jimmy takes her hand and spins her away. Later in the hotel room, Jimmy spins with Kate in his arms faster and faster towards the bed. He chucks her onto the mattress and jumps after her. The couple roll happily onto the bed together.
Where are you taking me on a honeymoon? Compost?
Wait a minute. I thought you were taking me on a honeymoon. Capos, Costa Rica.
They kiss.
Think you like it?
Under the arches of a bridge, Blanket is in full bomb disposal gear. He casts his gaze along the gloomy tunnel of archways ahead of him, and just ahead spies a cylindrical drum hanging on wires from a girder.
Yeah.
At the hotel, Kate lies fast asleep in bed. Distant city lights shimmering at the room's high-rise balcony window cast a needy bluish light about the room. Jimmy, half-dressed, pads out onto a balcony, phone in hand.
Bomb squad, Gota speaking.
Hey, Robbie.
Look, hey, Jimmy. Muscle tough, buddy. Listen, I'm sorry I couldn't go to the wedding. Rock wouldn't give me the day off, the brick.
Don't worry about it. You weren't missed. Listen, what happened with the call?
Manfred and I weren't invited. I know they're under the River Street Bridge, still trying to shut that damn thing down.
Blanket shoves a bullet into the barrel of his rifle.
Well, do me a favor and give me a call if you hear anything, all right?
You don't worry about it. Blanket can handle it.
You concentrate on the missus. Hey, listen. You need some love tips from the Cuban missile here?
I'm at the Four Seasons, if you hear anything.
Adios, buddy.
Bye.
Jimmy hangs up. Kate appears at the balcony door.
He'll be all right.
She puts her arms around Jimmy and gives him a comforting kiss.
Come on, let's go back to bed.
Kate heads inside. Meanwhile, under the bridge, Blanket takes aim at the drum.
Yeah, baby. I've got something for you.
An explosion engulfs the bridge. Jimmy's balcony window shatters as a fireball fills the sky, the explosion reflected in the pupils of his disbelieving eyes. Aghast, Jimmy hurtles for the door and rushes out. Police boats draw up on the water under the wrecked bridge. Jets of water from firemen's hoses target the smoking arch. The fire engines congregated on an adjacent road bridge. Arriving at the scene, Jimmy runs over the road bridge past Rita.
Jimmy! It's Blanket. He was under the bridge, using the shotgun to detonate the device.
They watch police load a body bag onto a trolley.
It was a simple gig.
Jimmy rushes to the trolley and opens the bag. The ghostly form of Blanket's inert, disfigured face stares back, the eye in his left socket burnt away. Sickened, Jimmy closes the bag as Bammer comes up behind him.
Something got screwed up, Jimmy.
Jimmy sees Anthony panting dejectedly as a fellow officer helps him from his protective suit, his sad face flecked with sweat. Jimmy looks about in disbelief. A crowd gathers at the scene, staring out amongst the onlookers as Gallaty wearing a hat and Hawaiian shirt.
And on your wedding day, Liam.
A fellow onlooker gives Gallaty a look. Gallaty shoots him a sideways glance, then stares back out at the bridge. Jimmy stands alone under the bridge. He crouches and picks up a shard of metal, then lets it drop from his hands. Day. People in smart black attire pick their way along the sidewalk of a suburban district towards a clapboard house. A crowd is gathering under an awning at the side of the property. A group of kids scurry over the road to the house. Inside, a woman sings. Anthony is sitting outside on the porch, looking reflective. Fighting the tears, he clamps his lips and huffs. Anthony heads off. Jimmy, in uniform, pushes past people under the awning towards a neatly groomed Max.
Will you look at this spread now? Why is it that a man always gets thrown his best party when he dies?
Inside, Jimmy watches a baseball game with Captain Fred Rourke.
That's the guy you want to play with ducks in the pond.
Ah, Jimmy, the bum is hitless in the last 10 at bats.
On screen, a player strikes a ball. The crowd at the stadium on the TV cheer wildly.
Captain, I got your replacement for you.
Dude, that Polinski kid.
Now, me. Till we get this guy.
You're in retirement, Jimmy, remember?
Fred, the bomb to kill Blanket, it was made from scratch. The guy distilled the info himself.
How do you know that?
I tasted it. Now, Franklin is not ready for this guy.
And Franklin is not the only technician we got.
Hey, you got a blaster out there. A real one. The ducks are on the pond. I'm the one you want to play.
I'll take it under advisement.
Fred, I know what
that means. I am trying to watch the game.
I suggest you go eat.
Jimmy looks up and sees Kate with Lizzie by the food table watching him sadly. Later at Kate's house, Jimmy is sitting on Lizzie's bed playing with her electronic keyboard. Lizzie and Kate appear in the bedroom doorway.
Love you. Good night.
Lizzie rushes over to Jimmy.
Listen to this. Here, wait. Listen. Hey, wait.
No, come on.
Wait, please.
Come on. Tomorrow.
in bed.
He tucks her in.
Beer. How do you know what beer smells like?
He tickles her chin. Jimmy heads out, turning off the light.
Jimmy? Did it hurt Blanket when he died?
No, sweetheart. It didn't. I'll sleep now.
Don't shut the door all the way.
Jimmy dutifully leaves a gap and goes. The exterior of an imposing concrete building, the Boston Police Department. A group of uniformed officers pick their way past the entrance steps as an unseen figure wheels a pushbike up to the building. Inside, Jimmy's teaching a class. He picks up a small tin-shaped device.
Landmines. This sucker here is particularly nasty. It's called a bouncing Betty. It's buried in the ground. It clicks when you step on it. When you step off, it jumps up to crotch level and blows goodbye to whatever brass balls you think you might
have. A classmate whispers to Anthony.
Girlfriend says mine are golden.
Jimmy sees them laughing. Jimmy wanders over.
You think this stuff is funny, Tony?
Anthony stares back, embarrassed.
Yes, I think Betty is very funny.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying this. Why don't you come up here, take a look at Betty, and you show the kids how you take her down.
Watch and learn. We're gonna have to get under it. Get a clean look at the bitch's firing spring.
He steps on a clip.
Click. Uh-oh. Oh, that's funny.
There's a bouncing Betty underneath Anthony's foot. Anthony goes to move away.
No, don't move. Don't move. That's a live one.
Jimmy grabs Anthony. A student raises his brow anxiously as Boomer pats Anthony's foot.
Boomer knew. Rule number one when you're disarming Betty, you don't step on her.
Rita knocks at the door and beckons Jimmy, who heads out.
Love a challenge.
Oh, and my Bettys, they come with a timer. You had 60 seconds. Come on, Boomer, let's get out of here.
Boomer follows Jimmy out. Anthony's stuck.
Yeah, run. Run!
Rita watches the class disperse.
See, school's going well.
Yeah, I was born to teach. You got anything?
Blanket's coroner's report.
She hands it to him.
Hey, keep it under your hat, will you? Captain's already on my butt. Wants to know why you got Franklin there back in basic.
Anthony steps off the Betty. It flies up and explodes.
It's hilarious.
Splattering the room and Anthony with red paint.
He needed some work on his Bettys.
Thanks, Rita.
What happened?
Recess is over.
Rita laughs with Cortez as Garrity, posing as a cleaner, comes up.
Thanks for the entertaining display there, Franklin. That was Leaping Anthony and his Bouncing Betty. Hope you all enjoyed that.
Garrity peers into the classroom.
Looks like you got a little work cut out for you there, buddy.
A fete with various stalls set up outside a school building. Under a brick archway is a stone statue of a man with arrows protruding from his body. Saint Sebastian. A ball bearing cascades down various plastic chutes on a child's toy. Garrity on his bike stares intrigued as a blonde-haired boy feeds another ball into the maze of coloured plastic chutes. His mother's at his side.
Almost for the toy.
She smiles.
Oh, that's Justin's. It's not for sale.
Oh, I was hoping to get one for my nephew. He lives in Dublin. Can't find such a toy there.
Why not getting this one?
Well, it means so much to him. He's laid up. He got hurt in a car accident, you know. Lost a leg, he did.
Shouldn't be driving that.
Justin.
$5.
Ten?
You're a capitalist?
Garrity sees Kate walk past.
Can I interest you in this U2 tape? Only $1.
You who?
U2. You know, the Irish band?
Oh.
Come on, everybody knows U2.
I'm gonna have to excuse my ignorance. I've been out to the mainstream a bit. But I'll give it a listen. You see what the loves are doing these days? You're a very caring mother. It's very pretty.
Garrity takes the toy. Kate finds Lizzie at a cake stall. Garrity watches them.
What are you doing? You are cruising for a prison. How many have you eaten today of these?
Four, three.
You're gonna get sick from that.
No, I won't.
Oh, sorry, I only had a 20.
Garrity, holding a camcorder, tries to film them both. Kate looks in his direction. Garrity turns away. Later, Garrity sees the statue of St. Sebastian. He stares at the grotesque face, contorted in pain. Views from a girdered bridge overlook the Charles River and the stone railway bridge that was bombed. Jimmy is back underneath the arches of the bridge looking for clues. He looks up at an exposed section of track running between the arches of the bridge as a train rumbles overhead. He wanders back into the darkness of the tunnel under the arch where the explosion happened. He passes some wooden buttresses and a vertical metal girder. The green girder is shielded by a wooden support prop. Jimmy stops by the girder, looks about, then notices a burnt, charred patch marking it. As Jimmy stares at the patch, a black and white flashback of the explosion plays on screen, of Blanket being thrown against the girder by the force of the blast. In the flashback, Blanket's helmet smacks hard into the girder. The charred black mark marks the impact spot of Blanket's helmet. A knowing, sad look in his eyes, Jimmy steps up to the girder and runs his fingers over the blackened, head-sized mark. Anthony appears.
So what are the winds are telling you, laddie?
Laughing to himself, he approaches Jimmy.
Only the bomb squad's supposed to be down here. Aren't you supposed to be in a classroom somewhere, tinkering around with little toy bombs?
Jimmy glares at him.
Disarming wasn't an option?
What, are you second-guessing me?
Anthony looks up to where the bomb was.
It was motion sensitive. We found 9 other triggers on the thing. Any one of 100 wires going into it could have done the deal.
Imagine one of them had to be aground.
Right. And I guess you would have known which one to cut, huh?
Why'd you shoot from here?
I picked a spot. It's the safest place. There's zero likelihood of shrapnel from here.
He points out the support beam.
I don't get it. He was protected. I don't get it.
Jimmy looks back at a steel buttress opposite the girder and sees another charred mark. He then looks up at a piece of broken debris hanging from the bridge. A flashback of the drum bomb exploding.
Son of a bitch.
Say what?
Most of the bomb's force was aimed up at the bridge, right?
Right.
But the drum, it's like a bazooka. There's a recoil. Now, where did the recoil go, huh? The overpressure.
The overpressure went down.
Yeah, down. But then where?
Down here.
The coroner said the Blanket died a concussion. Huh? The bastard!
Jimmy points out the buttress and the marked girder.
He bounced it!
Bounced it? What are you saying, that he tried to do this? That he planned for the kickback?
He was playing the bank shot. Look at the angle. Huh?
He was aiming for Blank. Then how would he know where he'd be?
You said it, the safest place. He knew the shooter'd go right here. Because this is exactly where he wanted him to go.
Anthony stares, brow pinched.
That he was trying to kill one of us. That's what you're saying.
Jimmy gives Anthony a steely glare. Anthony's pager goes off. A blue and white police helicopter flies over Boston's high-rise buildings, zooming between a sleek-mirrored skyscraper and a tower block. The chopper descends towards a square at the front of an imposing cathedral-like building. Vehicles are congregated in and around the square. Police cars, ambulances, and 3 trolley buses. The area is teeming with police and bomb disposal personnel. At the scene, Cortez and Rita are taking away the remote control bomb disposal robot. The small name badge on the robot reads Manfred. Jimmy arrives on his motorbike.
Hey, Jimbo!
Hey, Rita!
Just a tease, Jimmy.
Where's the device?
In the trolley.
Hola, Jim! I'll point the real good today, Jimbo.
Where is everybody? Where's Rourke?
Back there.
Jimmy heads for a trolley as Rita bends to the robot.
I'm with Mama, baby.
Vamos, vamos, valante, valante.
Rourke's outside the trolley.
No, forget about Fred. The bridge. You're staying out of the trolley.
I'm going to the trolley.
You might have something you get.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
Jimmy heads inside the trolley bus.
Jimmy.
Check the area for secondary devices.
The perimeter is clear. Huh?
You print this shit?
Jim, all that stuff, it's all been bagged and tagged. Look, this crazy theory about Blanket is not enough reason for you to be back on active duty.
Yeah, but you can listen to what he's got to say.
Back off, Franklin.
There's no harm in listening to what he's got to say. I'm the...
Jimmy picks up a bag containing yellow putty. Jimmy goes for Rourke. Anthony pulls him off.
This is not the way to go, man. This is not
look,
the way to go.
Look, I'm just as sick over Blanket's death as you are. But if somebody wanted to kill one of the squad, he wouldn't have to go through all that trouble at the bridge. You'd just blow the shit out of him. This is silly putty, Jimmy, not plastique. You're not making any sense.
Jimmy sees the word Manfred imprinted in the putty.
It's the only way to go, Cap. It's the only theory. Let's look at all this stuff now, see if there's any connection with what happened over there.
Cortez is with the robot.
Nobody's gonna make fun of him now, Rita. He did a great job today.
He gets a gold star.
He's a good boy.
Cortez, you treat him like a son.
Our son.
Jimmy rushes from the trolley bus.
Cortez! Rita!
In a nightmarish sequence, the action slows as Jimmy tries to catch Cortez and Rita, who are loading Manfred into the back of a van. Cortez reaches to a small ignition key at the front of the robot, but stops to stare at some scratch marks. No! Jimmy waves away an approaching helicopter. Cortez reaches for Manfred's key again as Jimmy sprints towards them. Cortez and Rita look round and see the helicopter flying overhead. Jimmy runs on, desperation flooding his face. As he nears, a police car pulls up, masking him from view. Rita and Cortez turn back to Manfred. Jimmy raises a hand as Cortez reaches to the ignition key and turns it. An explosion rips through the van. A huge fireball fills the air, scattering charred debris and blowing Jimmy off his feet. The massive blast throws a police lorry onto its end. The huge lorry topples, smashing down on a police car, which erupts into flames. Jimmy rolls amongst the burning debris. Anthony looks over and sees Jimmy tumbling amongst the flames and rushes over with police and firemen. The gruesome aftermath of the explosion unfolds in real time. Firemen roll out a hose as police rush to the van, smoking remains. Jimmy stops rolling and reels, gasping for breath, his face blackened. He sees Cortez's horribly charred body and recalls the dying woman from the flashback. Jimmy's mobile phone, lying near Cortez's body, rings. Garrity, on the other end, holds his receiver to a radio playing music. Jimmy reaches out to his phone as Anthony rushes over to him.
Hey, look, you all right?
I'm all right! Get these people out of here! There might be another device!
A shocked Rourke bends to inspect one of the charred bodies. There's a group around the other body. The lorry lies on its back, flames leaping from its belly as emergency personnel rush about. Garrity speaks to Jimmy.
Did I catch you at a bad time, Liam? Right, Garrity?
Oops, I called you Liam.
Is that you?
Didn't I? Jimmy Dole.
Much more lyrical than Liam McGivney. Much less Irish.
Listen to me, Liam McGivney. I've come to bring you a gift.
What gift is that, Garrity?
It's the gift of Pan, of course.
You're the reason they died, not me!
Oh, blame, blame, blame. Well, I suppose I'm to blame for the deaths of your new pals as well.
Garrity bangs a toy hammer.
Who's right, who's wrong? We were at war. Your conscience ended up causing the death of your own, Liam. You're a bad boy. You made me trigger the bomb too early.
I was trying to stop you. You said nobody was going to get killed. There was people everywhere.
And look who paid. Your old sweetheart, your friend, me. Whilst you've been prancing around the streets of bloody America playing hero, I've been a man without a country. I spent the last 20 years of my life in jail or on the run because of you.
Garrity squeezes a squeaky toy.
Ha, 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 but don't let me get morose on you. Fate brought us together again. I've come to Boston. Fine place for a Mick to lose himself, wouldn't you say? But what do I find? My old pal. On the telly.
Garrity laughs.
If we only knew what you'd done.
I did what I did because you told me I was a soldier. But I never killed anybody.
Do you ever hear of the Big Bang, Liam? Yes, I think the universe was created from an explosion. Can you imagine that, Liam? An explosion!
Garrity jumps up and down on the mattress of a single bed. It's Lizzie's.
God damn you, Garrity. Look what you've done.
Now you got me all wrong. I'm not a destroyer. I'm a creator.
You're not a creator. You're a sick freak, is what you are.
I've come here to create a new country for you called Chaos and a new government called Anarchy. All for you.
I can't believe I ever bought your shit.
Civilians die in war, Liam. But you disobeyed orders. You betrayed the cause.
You never gave a damn about the cause. The only thing that ever turned you on were your goddamn bombs.
And what lovely ladies they are, Liam.
Garrity looks out of a bedroom window.
Tell me, Liam, how close were you when she went?
Ryan, why don't you come down here and face me?
Could you smell her flower, Liam?
What? Are you still there?
Sure.
You're a chicken shit, Ryan.
I've enjoyed talking to you, Liam.
No,
And I don't want to be rude, but I must go.
Your new wife and daughter just got home.
Jimmy rushes off. Anthony sees him go. Kate and Lizzie make their way up to the front door. Kate opens up and Lizzie hurries in, first carrying a bag of shopping. Kate looks about, then follows her daughter into the long hallway.
Did you leave the window open?
I don't know. Here, I'll check.
No, let's get stuff in the kitchen first.
All right.
They head towards the kitchen together. At the bomb scene, Anthony picks up Jimmy's discarded phone and puts it to his ear. He looks up and sees Jimmy fleeing the scene on his Harley. Meanwhile, Kate and Lizzie enter the kitchen. Lizzie dumps the groceries in a worktop by the fridge.
Thirsty, bud?
I like red juice, please.
Okay.
Kate goes to the fridge.
Boomer?
Lizzie looks over the kitchen balcony.
Boomer?
The back door on the ground floor is open.
I must have jumped the fence again.
Garrity rides up outside the house on his bike.
He'll be back.
Boomer!
Kate goes and opens the fridge. Sparks fly as Jimmy rounds a street corner on his bike.
You want to make dinner tonight?
Yeah! Can I invite Sandra over?
Sure, I'll call her mom and ask.
Kate goes into a dark walk-in larder and puts things away.
What do you want to make?
Garlic toast?
You don't like garlic toast, do you?
She reaches out for the light cord and tugs it. The coil and the bulb shines bright white. Meanwhile, Jimmy motors along a highway. Kate goes to her phone and picks up the receiver. She taps the connection button, then notices the phone is unplugged at the wall. She picks up the small connection plug and pushes it back into the socket. The connection inside the wall socket sparks as she pushes it home. Kate picks up the receiver, listens, and starts to dial. Jimmy, without a helmet, hurtles at breakneck speed on his bike over a bridge. Later, he powers along a city street. Meanwhile, Lizzie pops a tray of garlic bread into the oven as Kate speaks on the phone. Lizzie shuts the door and reaches for a temperature knob.
Good, okay. We'll send her over. We'll be here. Okay, bye.
Lizzie turns the knob to high. A flame roars on the hob.
Oh, that's not the oven. It's one on the right.
Right. This one.
Lizzie clicks the knob round to light, and ignition spark crackles on another hob ring, then goes out. The spark comes again, lighting the escaping gas with a whoosh of blue-orange flames.
No, that's your left. Which hand do you pledge allegiance with?
Lizzie thinks and touches her chest.
This one?
Right.
Lizzie turns to a larger knob, past 200, 400, and then onto high. Lizzie kneels and peers through the oven door as an element inside the oven begins to glow bright orange. Jimmy rides into the path of an oncoming truck, swinging the bike out of its way just in time. Meanwhile, Lizzie watches as a flame ignites in the oven. Jimmy hurtles down a suburban side alley. Kate serves up bolognese and garlic bread.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Jimmy runs in and grabs them both.
Come on. We gotta get out of here. Where's
what?
Boomer?
He jumped the fence again.
What's happening?
Shh! Look,
Grandpa. Oh,
I want you and Lizzie out of here.
He ushers them out. Later, Jimmy approaches Lizzie's bedroom, shining a torch to illuminate the door. Finding it ajar, he pushes it open. The torchlight picks out an assortment of soft, cuddly toys and dolls, arranged in a diagonal line across the bedroom floor. Jimmy inches his way through the gap in the door and stares in puzzlement at the curiously arranged toys. Face still blackened, his hair matted and disheveled, Jimmy scans the bedroom as he steps over the line of toys. He sees a discarded phone receiver on a wicker chair, then his torchlight finds a cuddly bear, its t-shirt emblazoned with, "Go on, treat me like a dog." Jimmy lifts the torch and picks out the crazy smiling face of a toy pumpkin on top of a wardrobe. Jimmy sees that the wardrobe door is open and, growing curious, shines a light inside. He sees a black and white photograph of a woman hanging inside the door. Jimmy leans in, spying a thin rope dangling from a rail. He guides the torchlight down the rope, revealing the strangled form of Boomer, his muzzle matted with blood and saliva. Later, he buries Boomer in the garden.
Jimmy!
Come in here!
As he shovels earth into the grave, Kate comes out to the garden. She sidles up to him, looking shocked as she stares into the pit.
Oh, God.
Jimmy sticks the spade into the earth and looks at her.
My name is Liam. Liam McGivney.
What?
I'm not from here. I'm from Ireland. I was born and raised in Belfast. We were at war. I was just a kid. They recruited me off the playground. One minute, a kid turning on a merry-go-round thinking how blue the sky is. The next, I learned how to turn bleach into bombs. My whole life, I was taught to hate the English. Get him out of Ireland.
You're in the IRA.
No. He was too crazy for that.
Who?
The guy who did this. Ryan Garrity. We thought we were soldiers. I was in love with his sister. He was my best friend. Killed my fucking dog. He killed Blanket, he killed Rita. Cortez. He wants me now.
Why?
I screwed up his plans. I tried to stop one of his bombs, but the others got killed. He got captured. I turned my back on him. I left. And I want you to leave. I want you to go to the Cape. Go to Max's. I want you to do it right now.
It's my home.
Katie, you can't stay around here. You can't stay around me.
What?
You understand that? Now, it's safe in there. I want you to go in there and get your stuff and go.
Kate shakes her head.
I don't even know who you are.
Distraught, Kate runs back to the house and hurries inside. Jimmy stares after her and sighs. Night. A car is parked up by a harbour jetty. Its number plate, just visible in the twilight, reads Massachusetts Mad Max. Old boy Max, gas lamp at his side, is sitting on the jetty fishing.
What a fighter, huh? Look at him. Easy, no easy.
Max reels in a fish, unhooks it, and stares at it.
Pregnant, eh? They'll go forth and multiply. Mother mackerel.
A figure appears. Max jumps.
Oh, Jimmy, you're no better than to sneak up on a man like that when he's fishing. Sky's a fish.
Max hands Jimmy a can of beer.
I heard about what happened down in Capri today. I don't know what this city's coming to. Bad as bloody Belfast.
Yeah, more than you know. It was Garrity.
Give it a rest, Jimmy. He's in Castle Lake.
No, he's out.
What?
He killed Blanket with concussion. He blew Rita and Cortez out of the truck. He's taken out the squad. Same way his sister and the others died back in Ireland.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
He blames me for what happened. He's probably right.
What are you talking about? That bomb would have killed hundreds of people if it had blown in the middle of the marketplace like Garrity wanted it to.
That doesn't matter to Ryan. He's killed three. He'll go for more. He's already... Sorry, listen, Katie.
Oh, Jimmy. Where are they now?
They're in your cottage. Hope you don't mind.
How much she know?
I told her the truth. I said it a long time ago.
Bullshit, you should have. She's your wife. Not your priest.
She's my wife.
I'm going to find out where they caught about the bastard through
that. No, I don't want you getting involved.
I've been involved since the first
day. I don't want you getting involved!
Jimmy pushes Max.
Yeah. Stay out of this.
Jaw clenched, Jimmy thrusts the beer can at Max and heads off into the gloom.
Where are you off to?
Tell the squad.
You do that and you'll end up behind bars. They need you, Jimmy. You learn from Garrity. You can shut him down. You tell Captain Rourke and the squad only what they need to know. Nothing more.
Jimmy stops in his tracks, looks back at Max, then with a wipe of his brow trudges away. Max turns away with a frustrated wave of his arms. Day. Captain Rourke's briefing the squad. Jimmy's at the back of the office staring at a photo of Kate and Lizzie.
We're being bombed. From this point forward, we only disarm when lives are at stake. We don't go around trying to play hero. We just try and keep each other alive. Everybody clear on that?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Sergeant, what's the computer showing, like MOs for this guy?
Well, the closest match was a William Kulzowski, but he's doing life for blowing up a circuit judge, and the feds are coming up with zeros. It looks like our boy's a mystery man.
He's no mystery. His name's Ryan Garrity. He broke out of Castle Glade prison in Northern Ireland 14 months ago. It's the latest picture.
He hands Rourke a flyer.
According to the report, he can build bombs out of Bisquick.
Rourke eyes Jimmy.
You mind telling me where you got this from?
Contacted Interpol. They made their own search and they came up with Garrity.
Jimmy shifts awkwardly.
Yeah, he's a freelancer. Red Brigade, Libyans.
So why the hell's he after us?
Jimmy goes to the phone.
Boston Bomb Disposal. Yeah, he's right here. Bama, Connie, on two.
Hi, sweetheart.
Got it.
Connie. Connie, how many times do I got to tell you that I don't believe in that astrology crap, all right? Look, let me get back with you, honey, please. I got to go.
In a dingy bunker-like room, Garrity is at a workbench covered with various tools and implements, working by the light of an ankle-poise lamp. Under a magnifier, he uses a tool similar to a dentist drill to insert two holes into a tiny plastic yellow electrical implement with a letter R imprinted on it. Finished, he starts work on another similar electrical implement, this time grey with the letter L imprinted on it. Anthony is exercising, running up a flight of outside steps wearing a set of headphones. Wearing blue shorts and top, Anthony reaches the top, catches his breath, and runs back down the long concrete flight. Garrity appears on the steps, filming him with the camcorder. Garrity, wearing a jazzy t-shirt with blue wash prints of the Madonna's face on it and black flat cap, lowers the cam and squints his craggy pockmarked face. A new day. Anthony, in shorts and a jacket, arrives back at his apartment. He removes his jacket, chucks down his keys and dumps his pager onto a newspaper next to a phone on the coffee table. He turns on his stereo, heads for the kitchen, and opens up the fridge. He pulls out a bottle of water and leans on the doorframe, stretching his leg. He wanders back into the simply furnished lounge and glugs back some water. He looks down at the newspaper. The front page has a picture of Rita and Cortez with the headline, "Two more bomb squad officers killed in mystery blast." He grabs up the newspaper, sits in a black leather armchair and stares forlornly at the article. His brow beaded with sweat, he shakes his head and sighs. He then presses a button on his stereo and turns a dial. Anthony picks up a pair of headphones from a black mannequin head and puts them over his ears. Suddenly he goes rigid, hands clutching the headphones, a look of terror flooding his face. His brow quivering, Anthony very slowly lowers his hand from the headphones. Inside the left earpiece is a grey plastic electrical component with a letter L on it, the one Garrity drilled. It has a red and grey wire protruding from it. Anthony slowly reaches out to the phone on the coffee table with his sock-covered foot. He manages to press a speakerphone button, then mouth open, concentrating hard. He hooks the phone with his foot and turns it slightly to gain better access to a row of call buttons. With a sock rumpling, he pushes his toes down on the top button. It dials.
Bomb squad, Dove.
Lieutenant.
Franklin.
What at best a dream.
Franklin.
Lieutenant.
Franklin, you hear me?
If you're there.
You all right?
You busy?
Where are you? Franklin, you hear me?
Good things.
Later, Anthony, staring tensely at the ceiling, earphones clamped on his ears, sings along to the music as Bammer and Jimmy in bomb gear check over the room. Jimmy shines a torch into the earpiece of the headphones. Bammer checks over the stereo system. Jimmy stares through his huge visor as he shines his torch right into the small grill on the left earpiece. He jumps when Anthony speaks loudly.
Well, I guess if you gotta check out, Aretha's not a bad way to go. Hey. Cause you're probably more a Michael Bolton kind of guy.
Hey, huh? You don't have to shout. You're making too much noise. Bama, turn down the volume.
Turn it down.
Turn it off. It's on different circuits, all right.
People on the landing.
You want to wait and find out? Keep moving. Everybody out of the building.
Hey! Keep it down out there. We're trying to concentrate in here. Can you believe these people?
I think I prefer the music. What about you guys? Stay back on, please.
Pretty brave for having a bomb in your head.
Jimmy reaches to the earpiece, but pulls back and flexes his fingers.
Tell me something. Tony, why'd you leave SWAT,
Wasn't dangerous enough. And it's Anthony. Three syllables.
Yeah, you like to have it all on the line. More light. Put your light in there. Is that why you joined Disposal?
Everybody loves a hero. And I'm a hero, so there it is.
Yeah, you know what happens to heroes in this outfit? They get blown away. Which wouldn't be so bad in your case. The problem is they have a tendency to take other people with them.
Guess we're one and the same, you and me, huh?
Jimmy prizes open the headphone earpiece. Then, wiping the sweat from his lips, he moves away, ripping off his protective visor and helmet. He paces about, fixing Anthony with an angry stare.
You ain't brave, asshole, you're dumb.
Anthony's cheek twitches as he stares at the ceiling.
You ever seen one of these, Bama?
No, but it's just two wires going in.
One of them's got to be the ground. So cut it, right?
Jimmy illuminates a speaker.
Right? Hello?
Too easy.
What's the problem? What's the problem?
We got ourselves another device.
It's inside the speaker.
It's slaved. It's on a collapsing circuit. We cut one wire, they both go.
I always wanted to go out with a bang.
All right, we shut him down at the same instant, or we don't collect the hazard bait.
Later, Bammer inches clippers towards the red wire in the speaker.
Just the red wire, Bam.
Faltering, Bammer looks at Jimmy.
Don't touch the other post.
Jimmy is poised, ready to cut Anthony's headphone wire.
You ready?
Jimmy looks over at Bammer.
Bammer.
Shakily, Bammer puts the clippers to the wire, then retracts them.
Goddamn woofer.
He turns back to Jimmy.
Connie read me my horoscope and said that I should be wary of big dogs. You know, Wolfer. Dog. Believe this shit.
Lieutenant, I have to be here. He doesn't.
Sweat covering his brow, Bammer eyes his colleagues ruefully.
Yeah, he's right, Bammer. Come on, we only need two sets of hands.
Bammer dumps the wire clippers by the stereo speaker and clambers to his feet. He then hands the clippers to Jimmy.
Oh. Are you sure? No, I didn't know.
Bammer, unsteady on his feet, backs into a cabinet. Jimmy ushers him out.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Wasn't in the stars.
Jimmy shrugs at Anthony and puts the clippers into his hand. Jimmy guides Anthony's hand towards a yellow component in the speaker's exposed amplifier and puts the protruding red wire between the clippers.
Put a little tension on it. Hey, right on the wire now. Take up the slack. There you go. Hold it right there. Wait for me.
Jimmy walks around Anthony and inches the red wire and the earpiece between the blades of his own clippers.
You scared, Tom?
Anthony's eyes flick nervously.
Shitless.
Good.
Jimmy watches Anthony's shaking hand as he holds the clippers to the wire.
You're right on it now.
The clippers hover shakily at the wire Anthony swallows.
I'm waiting on you, Lieutenant.
On one.
On one, okay.
Three.
One. One.
On another one.
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 Three.
One.
One. Two.
They cut the two red wires. Anthony's eyes dart around wildly.
Got it.
Come on. That's it, buddy. Come on.
Anthony looks to heaven and pulls off the headphones, then gazes at the neutralized device in the earpiece.
Gotcha.
Kate is out on the wooden porch of Max's isolated beach house on the Cape, leaning against the wooden railings and gazing out across the grass-covered sand dunes towards the long sandy beach and to the ocean. She's keeping an eye on Lizzie, who's running along the beach flying a kite. Lizzie's dressed in a purple short suit, a patterned jacket, a baseball cap and trainers. The kite is coloured like the stars and stripes and has a long tail. Lizzie runs along with a kite reel in her hands. Kate wanders off the porch and into the beach house, sitting down at the kitchen table with a pensive expression. The kite dips. Lizzie yanks determinedly on the string, but the kite drops behind a sand dune and lands on the grass beyond. Garrity picks up the kite and walks towards a broken fence near the dune's ragged edge. Lizzie climbs up the dune and stands on the other side of the fence, watching Garrity with the kite.
Lost a little altitude, did ya? Here, this yours, honey?
Garrity tumbles over. Lizzie smiles as he gets to his feet.
Who are you?
Me?
This is a kite fixer.
In the house, Kate gets up from the table and gazes through the window. She starts when she realizes that Lizzie's disappeared and runs out of the cottage. Garrity approaches the fence, holding the kite.
Here, hold it for me. Here, can you hold it? Oh, come on. Oh, you don't talk to strangers. You're a very wise girl.
Garrity pulls out a flick knife. Okay. He cuts the string tangled on the fence.
You have to cut it?
Oh, just a string, darling. Just a string.
Oh, he cuts his thumb and jumps back. Lizzie runs towards the fence and grabs hold of his hand.
Does it hurt?
Not really. You're a very kind girl.
Kate runs across the grassy dunes.
Lizzie! Lizzie! Lizzie!
She tops a dune overlooking the beach. She spots Lizzie flying her kite with a strange man.
Lizzie!
Lizzie looks round at her mother.
Lizzie, come here!
Kate charges onto the beach and across the sand.
Elizabeth! Get over here right now!
Lizzie runs.
What, Mom? This man held my kite. He had to climb the fence and he cut his hand and he had his knife.
Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you.
He approaches, holding onto the kite reel.
Flies like a bird now. You wouldn't happen to know where the Lindstroms live, would you? They're cooking up some crabs. I'm kind of late. I got hung up here helping Lizzie with her kite.
He's wearing sunglasses.
Lindstroms.
Yeah, they're down the beach. It's the third house on the left.
Third house on the left. Thank you.
He holds out the reel.
So long, darling.
Kate fearfully snatches the reel from him. Garrity gives a friendly nod and a smile and strides away down the beach.
Hey, mister! You forgot your bag! Mister?
She picks up a bag from the beach.
Don't put your hands in there!
Don't touch them!
Kate pulls Lizzie away. Garrity pulls two live crabs from the sack and holds them up.
They taste better than they look. I should have been a pair of ragged claws! You are a pair of ragged claws. Oh, why do you want to be so mean to me? Because you're a pair of ragged claws.
He makes the crabs play fight. Kate and Lizzie chuckle. Puts one crab back into his sack. Holding another crab by the leg, he bows at Kate and Lizzie. Kate's smile fades. Garrity nods once in her direction, then strolls away down the beach. Kate and Lizzie pick up the kite. Garrity strolls past Kate's cream Land Rover parked next to the beach house. He stops next to it, pops a bonnet catch down on the bonnet, and pats it. He walks off. Kate and Lizzie run back to the beach house. The bomb squad watch a video of Garrity in silly disguises.
When thinking of the man and the women who sacrificed life itself, my suffering seems insignificant.
No, 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 no.
Yes, we know you tried to stop the bomb, Liam, but isn't it true you helped the mad bomber build it? Answer the question, Liam, yes or no.
When I built the bomb, I didn't mean for anyone to get hurt. It was the mad bomber. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men, make love, not war. Yes, yes, yes.
It's a bit late for all of that, Liam. The time is at hand.
Garrity sets off an explosion in the model ambulance. Anthony stares at Jimmy.
And you, Liam, my boy, are the first begotten of the dead. It'll do you a lot of good in the long run.
I want me dad, I want me dad.
He's not home, Liam. He's gone to war. Oh, no! You'll have to be a big boy now, Liam. Come, my little wretched refuse. Let me dry your tears. Here, show us your face, Liam, and I'll dry your tears.
The screen blanks as he's about to reveal Jimmy's picture. A curly-haired hot dog vendor moves through a crowded stand in a packed baseball stadium.
Get your hot dogs here!
Are you coming?
Get your hot dogs here!
Hot dogs!
Hot dogs!
Max pulls off his shades.
Right here.
The vendor crouches down beside Max.
What are you doing here?
Nice to see you again, too, boy. Give me a dog. Two mustards. Like mine spicy. Oh, you still passing the hot? Keeping the home front in hot potatoes, are you?
That'll be $2, O'Bannon.
You wouldn't be feeding away with brother with all that extra dough, now, would you? Just new here in town.
Well, Edward, brother, you've been in the sun too long.
His name's Ryan Garrett. And if you've done him any favors, you've done the cause a huge big harm.
Since when have you been so concerned about the cause, huh?
I'm concerned about people's lives, just like the good sisters taught me to be. But Garrity has taken lives, cops' lives. Not to mention the Irishman that he murdered when he busted out of Castle Glee.
Irishman?
Hmm.
What Irishman?
Check it out, why don't you?
I'm out of mustard. Be back.
The vendor returns and hands Max a sachet of mustard and his $50 bill, which has a Dowell's pub written on it.
Here's your mustard. Yeah, he likes his Guinness. Be sure to get the bastard one for me, eh?
Be a pleasure.
Hot dog! Come and get your hot dog!
Jimmy is sitting in an office staring at two TV screens which both show a freeze-framed image from the home video that Garrity sent, in which he's wearing a black balaclava. Anthony comes in.
Jimmy, what's up?
Come in here. Listen to this. Not the voice, but what's behind it.
I'm thinking of a man and a woman who sacrificed life itself. My suffering seems insignificant.
Sir Falkland.
No, it's too sore. I think it's a buoy.
My suffering isn't insignificant.
What are you saying? It's about the water? The whole city's about the water. There must be 1,000 buoys out there.
Not like this one. No, they use bells now, not horns.
Jimmy reaches for the phone.
Except for the ones down along the inner harbor, the old ones. Captain, yeah, get down here. I think I got something. Yeah. I think we got something.
Jimmy gets a cigarette.
What do you have, Lieutenant?
Hmm?
How did you know there were 2 triggers in my stereo? I mean, that's pretty damn amazing even for you. And when the truck got blown to shit, he called you then, didn't he? Didn't he call you?
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking you're the reason this shit's coming down. That's what I'm thinking. You tell me.
You're thinking too much.
Bullshit! I'm wearing a BD uniform, just like you. I'm a walking target, just like the rest of these guys. I just want to know the truth.
Anthony.
You just tell me the truth.
Anthony, if you want to do what's right for the squad...
What's right for the squad, what's right for you? Huh? You tell me something. Why did you join Disposal, Dove?
What's up? Who's got what?
Lieutenant's got it all. You should talk to him. You should talk to him.
Anthony leaves. Captain Drock stares at Jimmy.
What's that about?
He's feeling the pressure just like the rest of us. Come here.
The police and the bomb squad search an old industrial area of the harbour. In the distance, a huge steel frame bridge spanning the river. Anthony surveys the abandoned dockyard machinery and the peeling boats floating near wooden landing stages. Jimmy walks along to a derelict area of the harbour. He goes through a gap in a chain-link fence and walks towards the old rusting passenger ship, the Dolphin, moored at the end of a rickety wooden landing stage. Anthony catches up and clears his throat.
You know what you're looking for, Lieutenant?
What are you, my shadow?
The pair gingerly make their way towards the ship, which is listing to one side on the rippling water. In a Dowell's pub, the barman is watching a boxing match on TV. Garrity's at the bar.
That's it. Use the jab now. Come on, overhand. Use that jab, you donkey bastard. Come on. Come on, up there. Downstairs. There you are. Downstairs. Come on, take it. That's it. That's it. All right. Come on. Come on. Come on. Combination. Come on. Turn it over. Turn it over. That's it. That's it. Come on now. Just a little bit. That's it. That's it. Keep them mitts up. Come on.
Max goes to the counter.
Barman, Guinness. Give me a Guinness here.
You cock-knock, Seamus. Keep your goddamn mitts up. Come on, Seamus.
I believe our barman's got a bit of the legal tinder riding on this one, Dad.
Aye, seems to be a sickness with him.
He got a bit of Irish in that voice. Did you grow up in the old country?
What makes you think I'm growed up?
Garrity chuckles at Max.
I've been in this godforsaken land of bungee jumping and McDLTs since I was 12. Just didn't like the way they talked. No music to it.
May those who love us, and those who don't love us, may God turn their hearts.
But if he can't turn their hearts,
may he turn their ankles, so we'll know them by their limping. Ha! Great! You're a good egg, Dad. Fancy! You're a mighty warrior, but you need to bring us 2 pints for 2 points.
Yeah.
Wake up, Francie.
That's the way you get served around here, huh? Here, allow me.
Francis brings over 2 pints of Guinness.
Truly the nectar of the gods.
Sláinte.
Too bad we can only rent it.
They sup their pints.
Watch me, Bill, for me, would you? Need to go choke the old snake.
Max hurries off towards the men's room.
Watch your ankles, Dad!
Hurry!
Garrity sups his drink and watches the telly. Jimmy and Anthony are inside the Dolphin. Jimmy walks upstairs to the derelict gaming room and falls through a rotten section of the floor.
Oh shit! Watch yourself.
He pulls himself up. The floor is slanted and there's a dusty roulette wheel.
The Dolphin runs a crooked game, huh?
Check that way, I'll check up here.
Yeah, I think I'll go with you, huh?
Just do it.
Jimmy heads off one way, Anthony the other. In O'Dowell's, Max is on the phone in the men's room. He holds the receiver in one hand and peers out of the door at Garrity, who's still at the bar counter. Jimmy's mobile rings on board the Dolphin.
Yeah?
It's me, Jimmy. Guess what? I got the basher for you.
What?
Everything's under control. Now listen, I'm in the pistol at O'Dowell's pub.
Max, get out of there.
Get your eyes on over here. Just...
Oh, Dad, I was watching your bear fight.
Garrity punches Max to the floor. Max grabs a length of pipe and smashes Garrity in the leg. Jimmy listens in on the mobile.
Max!
Garrity closes the men's room door. Max reaches for the pipe, but Garrity stands on it.
You shouldn't have done that, Dad.
Yeah. Well, fuck you, Dad.
Jimmy lurches into O'Dowell's.
Where's the phone?
Back there in the men's room. What's going on?
Jimmy races into the men's room and pulls a gun on a punter at the urinals.
Get out.
All right, I'm going.
Go.
Jimmy spots a patch of blood on the wall. He finds Max's cap hanging from the telephone wire and pulls it off. Inside, he finds an old black and white photo showing a wall mural which reads, "Never be at peace." Graffiti in a doorway says, "Brit scum," and "Brit out." A dark figure with arrows poking out of it has been drawn on the picture. In the twilight, Jimmy rides towards Lizzie's large school building on his motorbike. He gets off the bike in his uniform and approaches the iron railings, gazing through into an alcove containing a statue of St. Sebastian, the figure pierced by arrows. Jimmy checks the railings and climbs over. Sounds from the schoolyard disturb a bird. Jimmy carefully looks over the statue, then passes quietly under a brick archway into the schoolyard. He inches along the building with his gun at the ready. There's a figure on a gently turning roundabout near railings at the end of the yard. Jimmy inches closer. Max is sitting on the roundabout with his hands cuffed, wearing a strange vest with a brass alarm clock attached to the front. Toy arrows have been fixed to 2 packets of explosives on his chest.
Max!
Jimmy, is that you?
It's me!
I'd ask you to give me a spin, but I'm scared to move.
His head is bleeding.
I'm ticking. Give a look here.
Garrity is looking down on the yard from a window above. He peers through a broken window pane as Jimmy examines the bomb set up on Max. Jimmy bends down and looks gravely at the many wires protruding from the packed explosives on the front of Max's waistcoat and at the ticking clock, which indicates 3 minutes to 12.
What's your prognosis? Am I going to be blown to kingdom come?
I'm going to my bike.
Jimmy.
Get my tools.
I don't mean to question your talents, but I'm pretty well buggered here, wouldn't you say?
Max, you said it. I learned from this guy. I'm going to shut him down.
By Christmas, maybe you could, but... Well, if he tried to do it in the wee little bit of time he got left, there'd be two dead Micks under the tree. And Gareth, he's drinking champagne.
Don't move. That includes your tongue.
Jimmy places two fingers on Max's lips, then hurries away.
I suppose it does.
Garrity limps to another window and stares down at Max, who's facing the railings with his back to the school. Max's hands are cuffed to a long metal bar which has a thin length of coppery half-pipe attached to it. The pipe has a detonator at either end and a small ball bearing with a dolphin engraved on it in the middle. As Max shifts slightly, the ball bearing moves along the pipe. Garrity sits down at a school desk holding a broom. Tears spill from his eyes as he looks heavenwards and solemnly crosses himself. Panting heavily, Max stares out over the sprawling city beyond the railings. A few nightlights have come on. He looks up to the sky.
Lord, forgive me.
As he moves, the ball bearing shifts in the pipe. Max staggers towards the railing spotted by Jimmy.
Max!
The ball bearing rolls down the tube and hits the detonator. There's a huge explosion. Garrity sits tearfully at the school desk with his hands clasped in front of him. Jimmy falls to his knees in front of the flames. Garrity smiles and rises up from the desk. Jimmy drags himself up and staggers towards the burning wreckage. Garrity escapes in a converted sedan with his bicycle in the back. As he passes the school, he gazes in through the railings at the forlorn figure of Jimmy, reeling in front of the flames. At the Bomb Squad HQ, Anthony is sitting at a computer searching for a connection between Jimmy Dove and Garrity on an Interpol site.
Garrity, Ryan, searching.
A police mugshot of Garrity comes up with some police data. Anthony is reading it as Kate walks into the office.
Hi.
Hey. You okay?
Have you seen him?
Not since yesterday. Sorry about Max. I don't know how he got mixed up into this.
Kate stares at Garrity's photo.
He's not in the bomb squad.
He identifies a name in a list of Garrity's known accomplices.
Wait a minute. Liam McGivney. 9/21/1954. What you mean?
Who?
Your husband. Your husband. What you mean?
Kate's uneasy.
George.
Church in town somewhere in Boston? Yeah.
I'm gonna let you get back to work.
She leaves.
You really don't have to leave. Kate?
Anthony pulls up information on Liam McGivney. There's no photo on file, and it says he's at large and wanted for questioning in connection with a bombing. Anthony spots the name Max O'Bannon, uncle, under living relatives.
Max O'Bannon.
Anthony swiftly leaves the office. Kate drives to Max's house on a Boston street, which proudly displays several American flags. Jimmy's motorbike is parked in the drive. Kate gets out of her cream Land Rover and walks in through the garden gate. Jimmy is floundering around, fully clothed in Max's jacuzzi, which is shielded on three sides with trellis.
Jimmy?
Hi.
Jimmy? Are you okay?
Kate spots an empty bottle of tequila and evidence of another one smashed on the path. Jimmy rests a handgun on the side of the jacuzzi.
Max Max could never get the bubbles to work.
Thinking of checking out?
Jimmy's dead drunk.
Huh?
She moves closer.
Taking the easy way out? Talk to me!
She jumps into the tub and shakes Jimmy.
Come on! Answer me! Answer me, Jimmy!
She plunges his head under.
How can I find him if I can't find him? Where is he? I'll find him!
She gets out. Jimmy fires into the water.
What the hell are you doing here? I told you to get away from me! Katie, you don't know this guy.
He collapses.
You don't know me. You don't know what I've done.
He rests his head on the side of the jacuzzi. Kate sits beside him on the ledge and strokes his hair.
No, I don't know what you've done. But I do know you. And you're not like him.
Her face crumples.
I love you, Jimmy.
Jimmy doesn't move. Kate gets up.
He was at the beach house.
Kate walks away. Jimmy tries to get up.
Katie, where are you going?
The concert's tonight.
Katie!
I'm not hiding anymore.
Kate gets into her cream Land Rover and goes. Jimmy picks up his handgun and heaves himself out of the water. Inside the decaying hulk of the Dolphin, Garrity is cooking something up in his makeshift den. Gazes carefully at a coffee percolator, watching bright green liquid drip through the filter into the jug. See the stone set in your eyes. Garrity carefully pulls the filter tray out of the machine, places it in a bowl, and takes out the white paper filter. A dense mass of dark green crystals have solidified in a circle in the middle of the paper. Garrity shakes off the excess green liquid and sniffs the crystals. Dressed in beige chinos and a checkered shirt, Jimmy pulls out of Max's house and speeds off down the road on his motorbike. Anthony is watching from his car on the street. He moves off and follows Jimmy down the road with a determined look in his eye. On the Dolphin, Garrity collects a number of identical crystal-encrusted filter papers in clear plastic bags which have been drying on a rack. Coloured fairy lights twinkle around a cabin door as Garrity disappears through a hatch in the floor with his filters. Jimmy is in the schoolyard at the scene of Max's death, staring at the blackened concrete. There are various police personnel examining the site and one taking photographs. Jimmy looks up at the shattered school windows, then crouches down and examines some salvaged bomb wiring which has been put into clear Ziploc bags. In the bowels of the Dolphin, Garrity is placing one crystal filter in each of a row of circular holes running down a sloping iron girder. He picks up a can of diesel and pours it into the top circle where it can flow down the girder into the other holes. Jimmy stands in the schoolyard looking shattered, a brisk breeze ruffling his hair. He turns and stares at the back of the statue of the martyred St. Sebastian, which has lost its head. He goes over to the statue and examines the saint's hands, which are tied behind his back. Jimmy spots something underneath the clenched right hand and digs it out with a pocket knife. It's a silver ball bearing with a dolphin engraved on it. As daylight dims, Jimmy is standing beside the blackened hull of the Dolphin, which is emblazoned with a large dolphin motif. He gazes across scrubland to where Garrity's converted sedan is parked. It's for the ship. Jimmy tosses the ball bearing into the dusty roulette wheel in the derelict gaming room. He's wearing a heavy tool belt around his waist. He hears music coming from an upper cabin. Upstairs, Garrity dances around his den with a bottle of booze. Jimmy readies his gun and advances on a staircase which has been booby-trapped with a nail bomb and trip wires. At the foot of the stairs, Jimmy spots the trip wires which are shrouded in cobwebs. Upstairs, Garrity switches on the TV, which is screening Kate's 4th of July concert from the Hatchell venue by the river.
Special live performance of the 1812 Overture on the A&E television network with 4th of July fireworks.
In the lower cabin, Jimmy has pulled a torch from his tool belt and is making his way up the stairs, stepping carefully over the tripwires. He shines his light into a decayed wooden step and sees the nail bomb lurking there, primed and ready to explode. He continues upwards, gun in hand. Up in the den, Garrity sways boozily to the music. Jimmy has reached the top of the stairs and looks up at a hatch in the ceiling. In the den, Garrity abruptly switches the music off. He flops into a chair at his desk. Jimmy peers through the hatch at Garrity, who's trying to light one candle on a strange-looking cupcake. The cupcake is on a plate with some figurines. Jimmy comes up behind Garrity and puts his gun to his head. America,
America. So you found us then, Liam? And on your new country's birthday as well?
Garrity lifts the cake up. Jimmy blows the candle out. It relights.
You always made us laugh, Ryan.
We had some good times, didn't we, Leah?
We did. They're not fun anymore.
Jimmy pats him down.
You got any weapons on you, Ryan?
Oh, no. No. Just this.
A trigger box.
Have a look. Now you're going to blow my brains out or shoot my finger off. What do you think would be the safest course of action for you, Leah? Take it over.
Why don't you do it? I'm tired of war. Go ahead, take us both.
No, it's not for us. It's for your lovely wife.
Jimmy glances at the telly.
Could be her farewell performance. Now you'll be backing away from me with that goddamn pistol.
Jimmy steps away.
Your chicken shit, Ryan.
There she is now, sawing away on her little fiddle for 500,000 beautiful Americans.
Don't do it.
Celebrating revolution. I'll bet little Lizzie is there as well. She's waiting for the fireworks.
Ryan, don't give me your political bullshit. You're doing this all out of revenge.
She's waiting for the rocket's red glare.
That was 25 years ago.
Doing you know what?
No!
Garrity throws the trigger box. Jimmy lunges for it and steps onto the clip of a bouncing Betty bomb.
Don't want to mind your feet there, Liam. Betty's a very particular girl. I hate guns.
He tosses the gun down the hatch.
You fell for it. That wasn't the real trigger. This is.
He presses a button and a display meter sets to a row of zeros. Elsewhere, the metal wind-up duck toy has been secreted behind a grill near a red flashing light.
Real fireworks for Katie and Lizzie will be later. So why don't you just settle down there with Betty? Maybe you'll catch it all on the telly. I wasn't expecting you so early, Liam, but don't you know it's funny how things always work out for the best?
Jimmy gazes helplessly at the TV. At the concert, huge crowds have gathered in front of the Hatchell stage to watch the orchestra. In the Dolphin, Garrity pulls a toy egg out of a golden goblet near a copy of the Holy Bible.
You remember how much we used to love to sing, Liam? Ba-ram, ba-ram,
ba-ram, bum, bum, Garrity taps the egg on the wall to open it into two halves.
Once again. Down the hatch, Liam.
Mind you, I'll be leaving you with my masterpiece.
I'd love to show you how it works, but really there's no time.
The egg is full of a silvery liquid. Garrity pours it down a sink and it spirals down a long pipe. Garrity sings as Jimmy stares at the TV. Again. Jimmy steps off the Betty bomb. It explodes in a shower of glitter. Jimmy throws himself at Garrity. The silvery liquid falls out of the pipe onto the roulette wheel, which starts to turn slowly. Jimmy and Garrity fall through the floor onto the stairs and roll down them, triggering the nail bomb. They roll onto the gaming room floor. Jimmy has nails embedded in his calf. He picks up a plank to ward off Garrity, who jumps onto him and strangles him with it. Jimmy reaches down, plucks out a fistful of nails from his bloody calf and shoves them into Garrity's face. Garrity falls back on the floor. He staggers up, but Jimmy belts him in the face with a stool. Garrity falls into some tall wooden scaffolding, which comes loose from the ceiling as Jimmy pins Garrity to the floor with the legs of the stool. Garrity shoves Jimmy back and kicks over the scaffolding, which sweeps the chandelier down as it falls, breaking a table under which Jimmy is lying. The roulette wheel turns and a lever tips a marble into a coloured toy plastic chute, knocking forwards a ball bearing. The ball bearing strikes metal and the marble falls. Jimmy crawls away through the wreckage. Garrity gives him a kick, injuring his sore leg. Garrity takes Jimmy's handcuffs and tries to cuff him to a post. The ball bearing and marble fall down a tube. Jimmy punches Garrity in the sore leg. The balls fall out of the tube and trigger a small cup that pours more silvery liquid into a clear funnel and a corkscrew tube. Wrestling, Garrity and Jimmy fall through a wall. Jimmy hangs on a ledge by one hand, his legs dangling. He sees the silvery liquid travelling down the tube beside him and tries to kick it away. Garrity stamps on his hand. The liquid falls onto a pair of brass scales which tip up, triggering off a chained reaction which ignites a match and lights a fuse. Jimmy cuffs his hand to Garrity's ankle and pulls him over the ledge. They plummet through debris onto a balcony overlooking the engine room. Garrity is lying on the floor and Jimmy is dangling over the railings by the handcuffs. The long fuse burns. Jimmy looks up as the fuse reaches a flagon of golden liquid which drops to the floor and ignites. Flames leap through a grill floor, igniting a second fuse. Anthony leaps through the flames.
Watch out!
Anthony shoots off the handcuffs. Anthony pushes Jimmy out. Garrity struggles up as the fuse reaches a nest of wires. He slumps against the ship's wall. They're running along the jetty as the fuse meets the first crystal filter and the dolphin explodes. In the ship, a wall of flame engulfs Garrity. Jimmy and Anthony race from the blast as burning debris rains down behind them. As Jimmy and Anthony flee, a chain of explosions disintegrates sections of the ship in turn, culminating in a gigantic fireball that does for the huge ship. Jimmy and Anthony race down the jetty with fire at their backs. They get to the end of the jetty and throw themselves into the water. Debris rains down all around and splashes into the water. On the hatch shell stage, Kate concentrates hard on her violin playing as the 1812 continues. She's wearing a white blouse and a dark skirt. The dolphin fire is emitting thick black smoke. Anthony follows Jimmy as he runs along under a shadowy jetty.
Where's your car?
Where's the boy?
Katie's in trouble!
Where is she?
Lizzie is with an elder woman leaning against the barricades in front of the concert stage. Both are wearing stars and stripes hats.
Watch your mom. They'll be along soon.
As Kate plays a violin, Anthony and Jimmy race around a corner in Anthony's car. Jimmy's pulling a nail out of his leg wound.
Said thanks, didn't you?
Thanks. Now we're even.
I don't think so, no.
Fireworks explode over the river. Lizzie watches open-mouthed. Kate bows her violin as the piece comes to a crescendo. In Anthony's car, Jimmy ties a bandage round his leg and consults his watch.
Come
Come on! Can't this piece of shit go any faster?
Faster.
Anthony smiles and races on. Lizzie marvels as the sky fills with glittering fireworks. Kate smiles at her fellow musicians. Lizzie and her friend applaud wildly. Anthony and Jimmy approach the venue and encounter the crowds. Jimmy and Anthony leap out of the car.
Police! Police!
They fight through the crowds as the fireworks continue.
Police!
You see it? You see it?
I'm with the orchestra. I'm right over there.
Come on, man. Just look how pretty they are.
Just hurry.
I don't want to go.
Come on, honey.
It's starting.
Kate helps Lizzie into the cream Land Rover and puts her bag in the back. Jimmy spots her in the orchestral parking area, getting into the vehicle.
Katie!
Kate and Lizzie buckle up, and Kate turns the ignition key. The speedometer comes up all zeros, like Garrity's display panel.
Katie! Police! And Bomb Squad! Katie!
Kate pulls away. The last digit on the speedometer creeps from zero towards one. A bomb is lurking behind the dashboard. The eyes of the metal wind-up duck toy glow red and it sparks a fuse. The car's tail lights flicker and go out. Jimmy jumps onto a police motorbike and races after Kate. Travelling up a hilly street, he reaches her open window.
Don't touch the brakes! There's something in the car! Listen to me!
Mom.
Whatever you do, don't put your foot on the brake! Take your foot off the gas and downshift!
The gears are stuck.
It doesn't work!
Oh, shit! All right, all right!
What about the emergency?
No, don't touch anything!
He reaches for the car. He tries again, grabs hold of the Land Rover and pulls himself off the bike. He hangs onto the Land Rover's fabric roof as the motorbike skids down the hill on its side, then hauls himself up onto the roof. He maneuvers himself around and leans in the passenger seat window.
Hi, Lizzie.
Hi.
Tell you what, why don't you get the back seat, huh?
Okay.
Go.
Jimmy opens the door and swings himself into the passenger seat.
Lizzie, put your seatbelt on.
Hi.
Jimmy shines a torch and feels below the brake pedal. Three wires lead behind the dashboard, blue, red, and white. Kate glances at Lizzie and swerves to avoid a car. Jimmy pulls off a grill and finds blue sparks shooting out of the metal duck toy as a small propeller turns on its head. There's a figurine of a soldier and a pack bomb.
Give me a break.
Now?
No, not you!
Kate swerves desperately to avoid traffic, pulling out into the road. Jimmy lies on the floor with his pliers and a torch. He gazes at coloured wires curling around the duck and identifies which one he should cut. He holds the torch in his mouth and readies his pliers.
Oh no! Hold on!
The Land Rover bounces over a hill. Jimmy drops the pliers.
Mom, stop!
Jimmy, it's a dead end!
Put on your brakes!
If you're gonna do something, do it now!
Oh shit! Oh, hit it!
Jimmy rips the top of the duck's head off as Kate plows into a black car, which smashes into a stone gatepost. Pedestrians leap out of the way.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Come on,
baby. There we go, come on. Come on, get out. Let's get out of here. Come on. That's it.
Anthony pulls up with a police escort.
Come on, sir. Look, there's a bomb in the car.
Whiskey.
Tony, clear the area. Get it back off.
All right, let's close the street up over here. Everybody, get back.
We're scared.
It's okay. It's over. He's gone.
Jimmy and Kate.
Where is he?
Doesn't matter. You all right? You okay? You all right?
Get back!
Anthony finds Jimmy.
It's all right, sweetheart. It's okay.
Do you ever get tired of being a hero? Jimmy, I'm sorry. It's, Liam, right?
What are you, a detective?
I'm Bomb Squad.
Oh, yeah?
The real question here is, who are you?
Jimmy looks up at Anthony, who's on some stairs.
Tell you what. Yeah. You give this to Captain Rourke.
His badge.
And tell him whatever the hell you want to tell him.
I gotta tell him the truth. I gotta tell him how I tracked the terrorist. I disarmed the bomb. And I saved the day. And I'm a hero. And everybody loves a hero. So you just go back to your wife and your kid and you leave this here for us heroes.
Kate swallows her tears.
It's not in your heart anymore. Here's Jimmy.
Jimmy takes off his tool belt and throws it to Anthony.
Job well done, Tony. Anthony. Thanks, man.
Anthony sets off his beeper.
Oh. Dad, come on. Get out of here.
Back. All right, let's close up this area. Can't you people do anything without me or what?
Anthony limps towards Kate and Lizzie.
You okay? You're a hell of a driver.
He hugs Kate.
Come here, Lizard. Give me a kiss, hey? Come on, let's get out of here.
What happened to your leg?
Oh, nothing, sweetheart.
It's all bloody.
Got a little trouble at work.
Let's go get you fixed up.
Wait, I thought we were going to compost. Huh? Maybe we'll
stand. Capos.
The three of them walk off with their arms linked. This film is dedicated to the memory of Officer Jeremiah J. Hurley of the Boston Bomb Squad and to the more than 3,000 certified bomb technicians throughout the world who risk their lives for our safety every day. ITFC audio description was read by James O'Hara. Under helicopter sky, take me home to the other side.
All of the men, all of the women who sacrificed their love never taste what we took for granted.